welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for November 5th. It's brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and joining me in cyberspace back from three games in Hokkaido is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Not too much. It's a Sunday night here, a Sunday night without baseball, first Sunday night without baseball in a long time.
Yeah, it's kind of lonely. It feels kind of sad to have not had a baseball game today, but hey, it was a great season. I kind of expected it to end this way. I missed on my prediction by one game, but I didn't butcher the entire playoffs. I got something right.
Oh, you got a couple things right, so there.
All right, well, we're going to discuss the Japan series, and what more is there to talk about? So let's start clearing the bases. All right, so you went up to Hokkaido. You didn't freeze up there, was it? Was it really cold?
No, not too. It was. We had a couple of cold days on Tuesday and Wednesday, but Thursday was a little rainy. But it was not December in Sapporo is usually. It's not even December yet, but the beginning of November and December in Sapporo is really nice. So, and it was real warm and comfy in the dome.
All right. Yeah, it looked comfortable for the Fighters, especially in Game 3. They came out and they won that game 7-3, so let's talk about these games in order. I thought the Giants were going to go up there and take it to them, and the Fighters fought back. I was really happy for them.
Yeah, they did. We had two foreign pitchers in Game 3.
Yep.
And Bobby Keppel, Brian Wolf.
Yeah, wrong corner. Right team.
Yeah, Brian Wolf and... DJ Holton.
That's right. And, you know, I was, the thing about Game 3 for me is I kind of was disappointed, and I started to become disenchanted with Kuriyama at that point, the skipper of the Fighters, because I thought he should have done a little bit more. I thought, not panic, but I thought he could have made some changes just to help his teams. I would have dropped Nakata a little bit in the lineup, showing Nakata their cleanup hitter. I would have made him maybe the sixth hitter or something, just because he wasn't making good contact, he wasn't getting good swings, and he didn't look good, and I would like to lessen the pressure on him, but they didn't really make any moves, and then Atsunori Inaba, yeah.
That's one way of looking at it, is reducing the pressure. I mean, there's so many different ways you could look at it, and that's one way.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, in retrospect, was before the game, he said basically, we just have to go back to doing what we do, and what they did in games 3 and 4 is exactly what they do. So I think in retrospect, he had a plan to not change anything,
mm-hmm.
and it worked out exactly like he expected. So it worked, so what's there to he did what he said he was going to do, and it worked.
Yeah,
so
and
what's there to criticize about that, I'm not certain, other than he didn't panic more.
Well, I don't think... criticize, I'm not sure. I just would have liked to have seen him do something because it just seemed like they needed a little bit of a push, a little bit of a spark. But yeah, you're right. They had a plan. They executed and do what we do. I mean, Inaba doesn't hit all that many home runs, especially there. So they got that home run for him early. The big hit, the double, in the next inning to help him start to get some comfort room in terms of the scoreboard. Helped out, but the thing about that game was that they had this big lead, but I never felt like they were in complete control of the game.
Well, they didn't have a big lead. It was what 3-1, and then 4-1, and then 4-2, and 5-2, or something along that range.
Right, they stayed about grand slam, three run grand slam distance from the Giants, but it seemed like the Giants were right there.
Yeah, well, the Giants are right there, which is what happens when you're in a 5-2 game, and there are runners on now and then. That, you know, every guy on, if you have a runner on and you got a 3-run lead, the guy on deck's a tying run. Yeah, that's true. But, I of course, yeah, well, that's the kind of games the Fighters have to win if they're going to beat the Giants. You know, you talk about the Central League being a better league, and I don't think really the Central League is a better league. I think the Giants are a better team.
Yeah, I think my comment earlier in the last show, I think, was that the Giants were better. I'm sorry, the Central League was better than I thought it was.
Oh, okay. Because I'm not certain how bad you thought the Central League was. So I
just think in terms of what the Dragons were able to do, and maybe it's because the Dragons pitchers executed well that time, or like you said, the balls that the Giants hit went straight at Chunichi and they made outs. either way, they weren't getting as many runners on. It didn't seem like the Giants had as aggressive at the plate, and they weren't taking the same swings, and they weren't striking so much fear into the Dragons pitchers. But then when the Fighters played them, looked like the Fighters pitchers, especially early on, except for Takeda, because he was great in his 11 strikeout game two performance. But guys were, they wanted to miss off the plate at all costs. They weren't willing to throw pitches and just fire pitches. They wanted to miss off the plate or down or high or way out of the zone. And therefore, the Giants took a lot of pitches that weren't even close. I don't know if you noticed. That was something that I saw on TV.
I think that happened with a couple of pitchers. I've got a long story. I would say this, that the Giants, yes, the analogy with the Dragons, that the Giants had some poor luck, and I think the other one is the Giants did not adjust to the pitchers they hadn't seen very well. The first time they saw him in the Climax series, and I think they really had trouble. Part of the trouble they had against Takeda was they forgot how slow he threw.
Yeah, the first look through.
Right. Now, the second time, it was a little different in that where in game two, Takeda was missing low, and in game five, he was missing high.
Yeah,
so, and difference and he was missing high, and his everything was actually, he wasn't trying to avoid the plate, he just couldn't seem to find his location in the zone, which was probably more dangerous. But any case, yeah, there was some of that. The Giants' luck, I think to be fair, the Giants' luck in the first two of the first three games in the Chunichi series was abysmal. I thought they got decent swings. They may have had made poor adjustments, but I think the Fighters, they were pretty much on it. They weren't really prepared for Takeda, I think. They did not make adjustments to his, but they were so confused. They didn't know what to adjust to. You know, it's a slow pitch A, slower pitch B, and even slower pitch C, and they all look fast when, you know, the next one's, you know, you're going from a 100 kilometer curve to a 130 kilometer fastball. That's right. You know, that's in a tough location.
Yeah, it's hard to adjust. So yeah, the Fighters get off the schneid in game three. They win their first game of the series, and then they come back in game four. And I just assumed with these two young pitchers throwing in game four that we were going to see some action and we were going to see some runs. So I wrote something on the Facebook page and I tweeted, boy, this is kind of a snoozer to see both of these teams struggling. We're not getting any base runners, and this is not what I expect. But this was a matter of expectations meets reality.
Right. Now, first of all, which is why I would ask you, why would you expect to see a lot of action against two young pitchers? Why?
Well, because
they're young?
It's because they're young. I just thought that they would be nervous, and it'd be hard for them to control their emotions. Miyaguni, I know, has been good. And to be honest, when you're a Giants player, whether you're a position player or a pitcher, you really have to learn how to control your emotions, because you're playing for the signature team in Japan, and you get out there in front of this big crowd, and they always have big crowds, even on the road. You probably get more used to controlling your emotions. So I was actually, in terms of what Nakamura was going to do, I wasn't sure where he was going to end up. And he had a kind of a rough first inning. It looked like he was going to give up a run right away. And it was kind of what I expected.
Right.
But yeah, just because they're young, it was their first experience. This is their first Japan series. Nakamura didn't pitch at all in the Climax series, so this was his first postseason experience as far as I remember. And I just expected more action, I guess.
So the thing is, I think the thing to realize is that we're only talking in this case about one game, and it's, you know, you just never know. And so much, I think so much of what happens in baseball is related to the run situation, because people are trying, you know, if you have to pitch tight. There's a thing about scoring runs behind a pitcher. Now, if you take 100 pitchers and they work 5 innings, and the guys, let's say 50 of them get 4 runs and 50 of them get 1 run, you will find that of the 50 guys who got one run, their group ERA is much higher than the 50 guys who got five runs.
Mm-hmm.
What you'll find out is, well, of course, here's the other thing. Here's the I guess, sort of the trick question is, how many of the guys who got five runs won 1-0 games? And the answer is none of them. When you force somebody to, when the game situation requires perfect, you're going to fail more often than you're going to succeed, but sometimes you're going to hit the bullseye.
Yeah.
The thing is, you can't predict what's going to, it's very hard to guess based on what, you know, on how much experience a guy's had, what's going to happen in a particular game. This is too many variables. And, yeah, I mean, on the average, I don't know if I would predict a lot of action because they're young or inexperienced or haven't done a lot, but, yeah, I think on large, that's not a bad guess to think, well, some, one of these guys is going to get lit up. One or both of these guys is going to get lit up, I think is very possible.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking in terms of being lit up. I just expected more hits, more base runners, and maybe a few runs here and there, you know, a 3-2 situation maybe after six innings, something like that. But to get nothing, we had zeros all the way across. So then obviously the later in the game it gets, the more intense things get. And I thought the managers, both of them, I emailed with Michael Westbay at one point, and I said, both of these guys are acting like this is a game they can afford to lose. And the thing that bothered me, I think, the most was when they had a chance, when the fighters had a chance to score and Inaba got on base, they didn't pinch run for him. And it didn't make sense to me because he's kind of slow. And,
well, Inaba is not kind of slow. Well, Inaba is not kind of slow. He's kind of slow in relation to the rest of his team. Yeah, on the fighters, he's a liability. On the Giants, he would be considered an ordinary player.
Yeah, I guess you're right. So I expected them to run for him in, I think it was the ninth inning. I'm going back to check right now since I don't have it written down. And he gets on base, and they don't run for him. And I'm thinking, well, why would you not run for him? Because, I mean, if you do get this hit that you're hoping to get, I don't think he can score. So it doesn't really make sense. And we're getting late in the game here. Just you know, make the change here. And they don't do it. And I don't know. I just kind of sat back and pouted because they weren't doing the things that I wanted them to do. And they end up not scoring a run and going into extra innings. And I'm thinking, poor Jim, you know.
That's cool. I was waiting for 15, man. Actually, I forgot that the game could have gone 15. I had a story written. I had, you know, once it got to the eighth inning, I had a Giants win lead. I had a Fighters win lead. And once I got to the 12th inning, when I got to the bottom of the 11th, I had a Giants win lead, a Fighters win lead, and a game tied lead.
There you go. So, yeah, Inaba doubled with two outs, and there he is standing on second as the winning run. And Koyana comes up, and he singled. I don't think anybody could have scored on the single that he hit.
The thing is, you can't, again, yeah, it's a play the percentage. And I think having said that, by the 12th inning, who was left on the Fighters' bench?
A guy named Kondo, the catcher.
That's right, the backup. He's also a pinch hitter, but he's a pretty good pinch hitter. The Fighters have this is not a guy on the Fighters' bench I really wouldn't want on my team. I mean, that's a good team from the terms of their reserves. Yeah. So anyway, he had a backup catcher, was the only guy left. And people asked him after the game, what was going to happen in the 13th inning? He says, well, I was going to have to worry about that after the 13th inning, because let me ask you, if this sounds familiar, if I plan to play 15 innings and I keep people in reserve to play those 15 innings and I give up a run in the 12th inning, where does it leave me?
It's down 3-1 in the series.
And it reminded me exactly of game 5 of the Climax series.
The Central League Climax series.
Climax series when the Dragons planned to play 12 and they lost it in 9.
Yeah, yeah. So, Iyama.
Now, the Yuji Iyama wins it with a little hit. Phil, you know, one of these accidental Yoshihito Ishii win hits, although it wasn't a broken bat, it was a little blue. It got over the outfield.
Through the outfield. Yeah, they gave him a double on it, which I didn't really understand.
That's a Japanese rule.
Yeah, I didn't really get it, but okay.
You get a base for every base the runner needed to score from, I guess, because I wrote in my first story it was a single, which in America, if the runner's on first, they'll give you a double.
Mm-hmm.
If the runner's on first, they'll give you a double. If the runner scores from second, they give you a single. And it doesn't matter if you hit the ball off the top of the wall and no fielder can touch it, it's still a single.
It's still a single, yeah.
And it's a double. I don't know what they judge it by. They give it a little figure skating score. Oh, it had the proper English. It'll get so much for self-expression, so give them a double.
Yeah, so it was nice for him. It was good, and I tweeted a single, and then I had to go back and delete that and put double because I saw that it was a double out there. But of course, you know, Hata had the outfield cheating a little bit, but it really didn't matter. That ball was going to go. That was going to drive in the winning run, and that was good.
Right. If they're playing back, it's going to score the winning run. If they're playing up, it's going to get past them. So just because it was hit perfectly between left and center, there really wasn't anything they could have done with it.
Yeah, so it's two games in a row that the Fighters win. That one was a little bit of a struggle. Hiseyoshi Chono of the Giants hits in his 10th straight postseason game. It was the first time since 1970 and only the fourth time in series history that a game went scoreless in the extra innings. So that was pretty exciting stuff.
We had there was, and we had a, you know, had this game tied. There was a kind of a little kicker there. There had been one scoreless tie in Japan series history.
Uh-huh.
And it was on October 31st, Halloween. This game was on October 31st. Although that was a 10-inning scoreless tie, I think it was because they ran out of light to play in.
Daylight, yeah, this was going to be my guess. So this is a long time ago.
Yeah, it was 55 years. It was 1957 when that happened. So it's kind of interesting. We had that possibility, so they missed that. And the other thing is the winning run is scored off a guy making his debut in the series, Kentaro Nishimura. Now, here's the thing that I don't get. You've got a closer, Kentaro Nishimura, who ostensibly you're going to need to be sharp in the event that you just don't blow out the Fighters in games 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
But one, you don't blow them. You blow them out in game one, and you're going to have a travel day on Tuesday. Why don't you bring in your closer who hasn't pitched for 4 days? Why don't you? Okay, game two is a 1-0 game. You could have brought him in there. I mean, ostensibly, if he is your closer to protect a lead,
mm-hmm.
That's okay. They won the game. I can't criticize that. Game three, again, they're trailing. What? We've got our closer who hasn't pitched now in over a week. Let's keep him around for a time when we really need him. I didn't understand that other than by the fact that he really wasn't any good in either of the two games he pitched. So I guess the reason he came in the 12th, they didn't have anybody better.
I don't know. I think they were losing confidence in him, to be honest, and he didn't instill any more confidence in him the way he – well, he gave up a run, so I guess that was the deal because he had given up runs in the Climax series as well. So his postseason numbers weren't very good, and I don't think they were comfortable with him, and maybe they kept calling him closer because that's what they called him all season, but I think they had plans to move Yamaguchi into that role long before his
– Anyway, yeah. It was a thriller. It was a great game to watch. As the game got on, both teams had some chances. But the pitching game, I want to talk to kids. Miyaguni's got a lot of pitches. He's got a bunch of pitches he can throw, and that's kind of interesting. And Nakamura doesn't really have a lot of pitches, but it's a work of art to watch a guy who's got, you know, fastball, breaking ball, and locates perfectly. And this is the same with you know, this is the same with Solomer. I mean, Solomer has got a little gas in the tank, but it's his pitch is basically fastball slider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with another breaking ball thrown in now and then.
But
and his location, it's just a pleasure to watch. And that was the game we got from Nakamura and to Miyagun. He's got a little more variety in his attack, but they just both really pitched well. And Nakamura was, as far as his control, was just a joy. So it was like a exciting, pulsating 0-0 soccer game in a respect that there wasn't scoring, but for me it was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it was good. It was good, and it was really thrilling. And then came Game 5. Now, the Giants end up winning the game 10-2, but I think the things that struck me were the Ken Kato acting, the Yoshikawa struggling, the Kuriyama sitting and watching, and Bowker hitting. And I think this game will be forever remembered as the Ken Kato and who is the umpire? Yanagida, what's his name? Masao? This is their game. I mean, the blown call of the century is what one paper called it.
The blown call of the century? That's kind of harsh. I mean, it was a blown call, and it, you know, this is the problem with video, is that, you know, in the blink of an eye, in the blink of an eye, you can almost really be excused for missing a call. But sit there and say, you know, I never missed it. I didn't miss it. It is hit his helmet. He knows everything's going on. Yeah, okay. It was a big blown call, and it was the reason the blown calls the century is because everybody could see that he blew the call.
Yeah.
It was so painfully obvious that he blew the call.
Yeah.
But by that time, of course, the game is already getting out of hand, and we probably ought to backtrack to the start of this game, because this is where it got lost early.
Yeah, so I was scrambling because I was calling some of the Yomiuri reporters and trying to find out about Abe and what his situation was, and they said, yeah, he's not going to play, and he didn't practice, and he'll be on the bench sitting there cheerleading, but he's not going to play. So I look at the lineup, and I'm thinking, okay, Kato, Edgar, you're going to play Edgar? Neither Kato or Edgar Gonzalez have had meaningful at-bats in months. This is a recipe for disaster. This is the kind of game you can see going 0-0 for 12 innings, not the day before.
Game four, we had the previous solution to No Abe, which was Michihiro Ogasawara. Would have been, to be honest, it would have been kind of nice. I was kind of pulling for him. He hit under the warning.
He hit a ball hard, and I thought he might have gotten it, but he topped it, so it had downspin on it, and it came down in a hurry.
That's a home run, but not Sapporo Dome.
Yeah, and not Tokyo Dome either anymore. But like I said, he topped it, but other places it might have gone out. But yeah, my thought immediately was that now this is the kind of lineup that could not score for 12 innings. So how are they? You know, where's the offense going to come from? But
everywhere. Came from under rocks.
Yeah, because Yoshikawa, the ace, who, again, this kid has never really pitched in the postseason, and he just didn't have it. He didn't have it from the start. And so, again, I looked at Kuriyama, and I'm like, you know, your man doesn't have it. You could tell in the first inning. He was going 3-2 on every batter.
Inning without a run scored.
Yeah, he wasn't locating. He was struggling out there. He looked like he was fighting himself more than he was fighting anything else. I would have yanked him after the first inning. I got to be honest.
I wouldn't have, but I certainly would have pulled him after Bowker's. I think after the second inning. Okay, you got the bottom of the lineup. Okay, and then you've got. I would have pulled him out after that. I mean, you gotta. I mean, if you get out of the first inning, you want to see what's he's going to come back with. Whether, you know, he's going to say, okay, this is what needs to be done. But after Bowker, why do you want to, okay, you're down 2-0, but you're at home. It's not, you know, it's not going to lose you the series. But on the other hand, yeah, I didn't understand that. And the reason I don't understand it is because what the Fighters have is, you know, they've got a bullpen that's just incredible. I mean, you got to really like the bullpen. They got eight or nine guys in there you can bring out for an inning apiece. it seems like a science fiction movie. They're cloning pitchers in the bullpen.
I didn't think it was a bad idea to go and get him, and especially after the Bowker home run, that would have been it for me. They let him finish the inning, And then, yeah, and then they sent him out to pitch more. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And I thought that my first thought was, well, show us the bullpen on TV and let's see who's warming up. But they only do that at Tokyo Dome. So we didn't even know who was warming up. And Kuriyama just sat there, and he just sat there. And I was just flabbergasted. And again,
didn't get through the third inning. I'm getting ahead of myself.
No, he did. Yeah, they sent him out to pitch the third inning, but no, he didn't get through. So, no, he pitched two and two-thirds innings. Exactly. So then the Ken Kato act, and, you know, I like Ken Kato. I did a story on him last year because he came in and filled in for Abe for a short time, and the old fogey former players who are in the media now criticized his pitch calling, and they weren't kind about it. And he's just a backup guy who gets, you know, a few at bats every season. He's nothing serious, right? But he will live in infamy for this act here. He gets a pitch in the fourth inning that kind of buzzes him, but he acted like it hit him in the head.
First of all, pitch buzzed him because his forehead was over the plate. Look, he's going down to bunt. He's trying to lay down a bunt. And his forehead is over the plate. I mean, he's right on top of the plate. Okay, now the ball is high out of the zone, but it's not inside.
Yeah, it's over the plate almost, yeah.
Exactly over the plate. Which is, okay, so that's just a fact. We'll leave with that. Okay, now he bails out. And in the process of bailing out, now I think the ball hit that.
It didn't hit anything.
Okay, I couldn't tell from the video whether his bat or it hit the catcher's glove. Okay, because it did ricochet a little bit, because it ricocheted over past the umpire's head. Now, Kato bailed out, and he bailed out awkwardly, and he hit himself in the face with the barrel of the bat. He struck himself in the face with the barrel of the bat, and the umpire called it a foul ball. He signaled, this is the thing that kills me, he signaled foul ball, and then he saw Kato lying on the ground in agony, and he realized, well, he must have been hit with that pitch.
Yeah, he saw him writhing, and then he reacted to it. And you can see it on the replay. It's like he looked down and says, oh, my goodness, he's been hit. Man down!
Exactly. So this is the blown call. Now, I can understand in an instant if he saw it, and this is what came up later. Okay, now, if he sees it, and he sees the guy reacting to the ball, and he sees the way the ball ricocheted. I think it ricocheted off of the top of Shota Ono, the fighter's catcher's glove then. And it hit the top of the glove and bounced past his head. He had to think, of course, his first reaction was foul ball. Now, if his first reaction is the ball hit him, this is very understandable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he made a mistake and thought the ball was coming, you know, from his perspective, he couldn't tell whether it was coming off the player and the ball or the glove or the bat. But he signaled foul ball, and then he couldn't figure out why he was writhing in pain and he had a foul ball, so he put two and two together and said, you know, he got hit. Okay, now, this is where it gets funny. Now, Kuriyama comes out, and he says, to me, it looked like the ball did not hit him. I saw it did not hit him. From where of course, he's got the replay in the dugout, which the umpire doesn't have. I'm telling you, it did not hit him. And he asked the umpire, his former teammate with the Yakult Swallows for 4 years in the late 80s, he says, how did you see it? And he said, it hit him. No, I didn't ask you it hit him. What did you see? And he wouldn't answer. And he said, no, you've got to explain how you made your decision, mm-hmm. how you could call for a foul ball and then say you hit it hit him after you saw the guy on the ground. And he basically said, mind your own business, I'm the umpire.
Get out of here, kid. You bother me.
Kuriyama lost his cool, and at the end he says, you know, the other umpire came in and said, your 5 minutes are up. Well, it used to be 3 minutes. I guess I get 5 minutes in the Japan series to make it go slower. One of the base umpires comes in and points to his watch and said, your 5 minutes are up. And so he says, look, I'm going to throw you, buddy. He said, throw me. Go ahead. Throw me. So he was really livid about that whole thing about, you know, why don't you answer the question? How did you see it? And, okay, so now here's the next thing. And it gets worse because Now the ball is over the plate, and he calls it. The umpire ejects the relief pitcher.
Right. It's
Tadano,
yeah.
He ejects him for throwing at Kato's head when Kato's head was above the strike zone. The ball was over the plate. How can you throw at somebody's head when he sticks it over the plate? I mean, Kato put his head in the way of the ball as much as anything. So it was like, it was just a bad series of decisions by Mr. Yanada. And, you know, and was Kato acting? You know what? If I'm in Kato's place, I'm going to say, they say go to first base. I'm going to go to first base. I'm not going to say no, the ball didn't hit me, you know, because that's what Japanese baseball is all about, winning. It's not about fair play. That's what you do anywhere. You're supposed to win the game. You're not supposed to argue with the umpires and give things away.
Well, it's like I always say, hey, look, let the umpires make the decisions and you play the game. But anyway.
Anyway, so the whole thing is, and okay, what's interesting here is that, 7 years ago or so, Bobby Valentine was talking. Sure, okay, I'll have to put a little of my own
embellishment
explanation this. But, how would we go about selling the rights, overseas rights to the Japan series? If somebody wanted to buy them, how would they buy them?
Mm-hmm.
And he asked me if I knew, and I didn't know, so I called NPB. And somebody at NPB told me that they would have to decide, the NPB's overseas rights would have to be decided at the July.
At the July owners meeting?
They'd have to basically permit this to happen. Well, that didn't happen, but apparently Mr. Setoyama, who was then the chief executive at the Marines, went to NPB with the team's request to say, we would like to discuss this. Why don't we market our game overseas? Why don't we sell the Japan series? And the answer given by some people at the board of directors meeting was, we can't broadcast the Japan series overseas because it will put our stakes on display and embarrass us, which is what a dumb thing to say. But having watched Yanada's decision, I have to think they're onto something.
Maybe they knew what they were talking about, yeah.
So the fighters are in a bad spot, and then they lose the one pitcher who's gotten an out in the inning. And, it's sort of like adds insult to, you know, they've already shot themselves in the foot by keeping Takeda out there.
It was Yoshikawa.
Yoshikawa, excuse me, and I'm confusing my bad starts here, and and then this happens, and the Fighters fans, and this is very interestingly enough, the Fighters fans, the next time Ken Kato comes up, he, you know, they said he was booed, and he was booed, and people in the stands were holding out their thumbs, pointing, giving him thumbs down. I didn't hear, it didn't sound like everybody was booing him, but they were making a lot of noise. It was loud. And Kato, to his credit, he hit a ringing two-run double that essentially iced the game.
So I called this on Twitter. I said, this is a new way of stealing a base. Yeah, so then I said, first he was acting like he was hit, now he's acting like a hitter.
Good one.
but, yeah, it was embarrassing for Japanese baseball. I did think that, and I didn't think it was I think Kato will be remembered for that for a long time, and the bulk of the blame for me goes to the umpire. Don't get duped. You know, you're supposed to be watching the game. It happened right in front of you. So
go with your first reaction, because most of the time it's going to be right. If you call it a foul ball and you miss it, if you think he's got a hit, he's been hit, do it. Because the worst thing you can do is second guess yourself. And I say this, you know, and I say this with all due respect for the very, very hard job. I mean, the ball's in very fast. Everything's in motion, and you're supposed to dissect it analytically as if you had a split second video delay, and you don't. And it's a tough job. And anybody who wants to do it, you know, my hat's off to you.
Okay.
Now, he made a mistake. Okay. And he made another mistake. Okay. Well, you know, do your best and get it right and be a better ump next time. I hope everybody learned from it. But yeah, I can't really hold too much umpires to too much blame, because that's a job I really wouldn't want to do.
Me either, but most of the time they're good at it, and I respect them. They just missed a call, and like I said, I've always said, hey, they miss calls all the time. Players miss pitches. Pitchers mislocate pitches, if mislocate is a name. Thank you very much, Roger Clemens. But it happens all the time. The human element, we've spoken about it a lot. So now you had you did get in the scrum a couple times and get some interviews for us. So quickly tell us who you talked to.
We had John Bowker coming off to face Yoshikawa for the second time in the series, and he hit his second home run off of Yoshikawa, so John Bowker was there. And the other thing was Edgar Gonzalez, who hadn't played in all of the Climax series, and he hadn't played in the first four Japan series games, and, whoa, here he is in the lineup. Like, I'd been talking to him throughout the week, saying, hey, Edgar, when are you going to get into a game? And he said, if I don't get into a game, that's okay with me. You know, what can I do? It's beyond my control. And here he is in a game, and he smacks one in the second inning. He smokes one. Now, if there's a reason to take out Yoshikawa in the second inning...
That's certainly a reason, yeah. Yeah, I agree with you.
Nakata in left field. Yeah. And so that was one reason. Then he comes up in the third inning and he hits one to the wall in left center for a one-run double. So, yeah, and then he hit another ball quite hard. So, yeah, what a great game for a guy who's been in a meaningful game. His last meaningful game, I think, might have been on his 14th birthday.
Oh, come on now. All right, so you went a couple of times, a couple of different days, and... I spliced together the interview, so let's take a listen to him.
Yeah.
Finally get a call.
Good. It feels really good.
Let's start with these guys first.
You
haven't played in a while, you know, but you got a couple of hits and did well today. You know, what was the factor?
I just thank God that he made me be able to be calm at the plate and be able to relax and have fun and enjoy the game, because I was pretty relaxed and I was surprised with that, and I just felt pretty good, so I'm happy.
You know, it was a tough time, you know, in the minor, spending time in the minor leagues, mm-hmm. right? But Bowker, you know, hit that home run. Is that mm-hmm. got you motivated? Or, you know,
yeah, I love playing with Bowker. I mean, we help each other out. We feed on each other. And being in the bench with him, being able to talk English with him, it helps me. At least it helps me be more comfortable and be out there. And
then him hitting that home run.
And him hitting the home run helped everything get started for the team. I mean, thank the manager, too, for putting me in there, having faith in me. And I'm just glad I was able to contribute.
Yeah, we actually did pretty good when
we
happened. Okay, tough season for me.
Right.
But to be able to come out and, you know, help the team out, help the guys, that was pretty good.
Right in the Climax series.
Yeah. I mean, so whatever I can do, you know.
Right. So you were obviously ready and prepared.
I try to stay ready no matter what. I mean, that's what we're. You know, it's not fun sometimes in the minor leagues, but you still gotta put the work in. You know,
right? Because this can happen.
Yeah.
So you feel like you were successful last time, got a home run from last time, so you had it. Yeah, it's feeling good doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I had faced a couple of bats. I was familiar with what he had, and I was able to. Put a couple of runs on the board to, help the team out at the beginning of the game.
Also, just wants to know, in your mind, a couple games, you do get any hits. You were off the roster yesterday and playing today.
You still try to stay positive and, do what you can to, if you get that chance to play, you want to be ready.
How did you spend the day after you left the field yesterday? We were in your room watching the game.
Yeah, I was just watching the hotel.
So you feel like, Abe has been throughout the year, kind of helped you out, in ways, and that our lineup without Abe, feel kind of good that you could a hit.
Yeah, Abe's definitely been a help throughout the year. He's a tremendous player. He goes out of his way to help guys, especially me being new. And you know, not having that in the lineup is definitely, you know, it hurts. And he's in there cheering on the bench, so, you know, he's there to take for us.
Must be pretty sweet, though, first game back in the lineup and that you run over.
Yeah, I mean, just trying to help the team any way I can. I was able to, you know, contribute to that tonight, and we got, you know, another game on Saturday, so that's what we're focused on now. We got to go.
Yeah,
got to go.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, man. Good job. Nice game.
All right, well, thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate you sticking the tape recorder in the scrum there and talking to those guys. It was good to hear their voices and really good to hear Edgar. And, you know, like I said before, I don't really think God cares about baseball, but maybe he cares about those particular players. So he did look relaxed up there. That is the truth. He was swinging the bat really, really well for a guy, like you said, hadn't had a meaningful game in a long time.
Yeah, and anyway, they both guys you know, you talked about being able to handle the pressure. Well, if you're a foreign player for the Giants, the pressure you have to handle is never playing. Both of these guys were, you know, they were seen about as often as a lunar eclipse this year. they went about their business. They stayed as sharp as they could. Well, subjectively, they stayed sharp enough. Could they have practiced more? Sure. They could have spent 24 hours a day practicing. But anyway, they did their jobs competently. They came out in a game and did their jobs competently. They had pitches they could hit. They put good swings on them. End of the story.
Yep. All right. So game six, the teams come back to Tokyo Dome on Saturday, and the Giants win 4-3 and win their 22nd Japan Series championship. And they do it with Shinnosuke Abe capping what's probably going to be an MVP season for him with an RBI single in the seventh inning. Now, Shohei Nakata also for the Fighters hit probably the biggest home run of his career, I think. In the sixth inning, he hits a home run with two on to tie the score at 3-3. And then Kuriyama does something that's really interesting again for me. He sends in Yuya Ishii, whom I really like because we know he's got that, he's hearing impaired. And, I've been rooting for him since his days as a Chunichi Dragon. And it seemed like Kuriyama just made up his mind that he's going to give, because they're in a tie situation, he's just going to give each of his, bullpen guys an inning. And
he has been doing it and it's worked out like a charm, so.
But if you're going to do that and you got a guy, I mean, it's so funny because they flash on the screen, you know, Shinosuke Abe hit 382 against left-handed pitching this season. And I tweeted, I said, well, they're not going to come near the plate. And, you know, first pitch is out of the zone, then they come back with a strike, and then another couple pitches out of the zone, and then they throw him a strike on 3-1. And I'm like, why bother? Why? Just get past this guy. He's a batting champion. He's having a great year. He's I know people don't like to hear that he's clutch, but I just think he gets the bat on the ball in, you know, two out situations with his runner, when the runner's on, and whether the ball falls in or not, it doesn't really matter. He's a tough out in that situation. Just walk him. And I know the book says don't put any extra potential runs on base in a tie score situation late in the game, but why let that guy beat you? There's an inferior batter on deck in Shuichi Murata. Why don't you go after him and you just bring in a right-hander to pitch to him? I didn't really understand the strategy there, other than the only thing I could figure out is, hey, look, it's his inning, and they're going to get to the next inning when they get to the next inning.
Well, this goes back to the thing I was talking about before is, you know, playing your game. Now, playing your game is fine and when it works, and you can second guess everybody for not playing their game or losing. So it's a win, you know, a no win situation essentially. Your only way to win is to win the game, to avoid being second guessed. But okay, there's two ways of thinking about it. One is I'm going to do what works with my team, or I'm going to do what always worked because I want people to stay in their roles, and I want, but you know what? it doesn't matter what roles you are in Game 6 of the Japan Series. That stuff's out the window.
Exactly.
And I bring this up because what happened last year and in the postseason was this massive, this tidal wave of relief moves by the Yakult Swallows and the Chunichi Dragons in the Climax Series and the Chunichi Dragons in the Japan Series. Everything was different. Everything that had been normal up to that point was no longer valid. And you know what? That's saying, I know this is what this guy can do, and I want him to do it now. But on the other hand, you know, that's one way to do it, and the other way is, I think this guy can do one inning, and I'm confident he can do one inning. And at what point do you pull him and say, we're going to change the script? I don't know. I'm not a manager. I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions. I was pretty comfortable. I mean, Ishii has looked pretty good. Now, I'll be honest that when this happened, I was shocked to look up. I was busy doing three or four different stories at the same time. And I saw Nakata's home run. And then I was looking up at the thing again, at the score, going, oh, when did this run come in? So I did not see it at all. So I can't really comment other than, you know, if it's me, yeah, the plan looks good because Ishii's been rock, so he's been pretty good. And Abe hasn't played in a while. And yeah, why not? And did Abe hit 382 against lefties this year or 450 against lefties or 750 against lefties? Yeah, well, who cares? That's this year. It's not this right now. That's during the season. It's, you know, it's not this given situation. Is he clutch? Does he ever get phased? No, pretty much. He's pretty fearless. Of course, in that situation, you kind of want him to get the bat. I mean, if barring a strikeout, you're okay getting the bat of the ball. I know he hit a ground ball, I guess.
Yeah, he hit a ground ball that got through, but yeah, I don't know. I don't want never. You know my friend. I would just never pitch to him in that situation. I don't care. I'm not gonna let the all star or the superstars beat me. I'm gonna get the other guys. And granted, in this series in particular, again, the role players and the part-time guys really came through, the Matsumotos, the Terauchis getting hits and getting on base and just being all-around pests and all that stuff, but I'm still going to make those guys prove it. I mean, in the series, Abe hit 250, Murata hit 182. I'm going after him. But
he did not look good against the Fighters pitching. He looked okay against the Dragons, kind of, sort of, but basically his natural What's the world coming to when you say Shuichi Murata's natural position is third base, not in the batter's box? He played like a utility infielder most of the.
Well, I did mention that too, but maybe we'll get to that in the wrap up part. But pitching to Abe, no, I wouldn't have done that. And I thought Kuriyama made a mistake there, coming off the move to take Takeda out of the game, which he made a quick pull yank of his starter, which I was really happy about because he wasn't getting the job done either. So it was good that he decided to make that move, but I didn't understand why he stopped and sat and stared again in a situation where he could have made a move. And again, second guessing is great because we know after the fact, but I was screaming at the time that it was happening. I'm like, well, you're not going to pitch to this guy. And I have the tweets to prove it. Well, I said they're not going to throw a strike. I was surprised that they threw the ball anywhere near the zone. And they did. So, it was Ishii's fault in the first place for walking the leadoff man, but Chono just had a great series. He was my actual pick for MVP. I think he was my number one pick for MVP. Hitting all 12 postseason games for the Giants. He was pretty awesome. So,
he was good. And he made, to me, I'll tell you, the interesting thing is the Giants had really one chance to win that. And the Fighters had one chance to win it. And the Fighters came in the top of the seventh. And when Fukuda, they bring in Fukuda and they're leading 3-0. And he loads the bases with two outs.
Right.
He misses inside to Inaba. And Inaba crushes it. Yoshio Itoi.
Yeah, but they brought in Kyosuke Takagi to face Itoi.
Fukuda loaded the bases. They bring in Kosuke Takagi. Now it's two outs. The bases are loaded. And he misses inside and not very high, not a little bit. He misses inside and that it's still right over the plate. And Itoi gets a beautiful swing on it and he hits a rocket. And now the fighter's luck turns against him because he hits it right at Hisayoshi Chono in right field. And that is the end. You know, that one looks like two runs easy and maybe three. And it is supporting three runs, and Tokyo Dome is probably two. But that could have been the game. Could have had game seven with that one, but he hit it right at somebody. So there you go.
Yeah, and they said that Chono had backed up a few steps just before that pitch, and that helped him get to that ball. So, yeah, Chono squeezes that ball. Sakamoto makes a great play, a really good play, because the left side of the infield was great for the Giants in the series, especially Murata. I put him as an honorable mention for MVP just simply because before he used to hit balls over that way, and you could expect, you know, you hit three or four balls over there that one of them you're going to reach base. But he made all the plays. I think there was one play he dove at that he didn't make. But we're running out of time here, so we got to wrap it up. My total impression about the Japan series was I was really impressed with the depth of the Giants, because if you recall, I picked the Giants in seven games, and that was with the thought that Toshiya Sugiuchi was going to pitch. He didn't throw a ball in this series, and they win it in six games, and they were pretty dominant, even in that game where I laughed at the lineup thinking this could be the one that would be shut out in game five, and they end up with 10 runs in that game. So that was my impression, is that we saw a really, really deep team with all the role players and everybody else stepping up in big moments to carry them to a championship. And I fully expected them to win a championship when we did our previews in the off season, or just before the season started. I predicted that they would win it all, and so it was just a matter of what kind of drama we would see, and it turns out that it was pretty exciting stuff, even though I figured they were going to win.
Well, I thought, you know, anything weird, you know, as we saw in the major leagues, or some of us saw in the major leagues, anything can happen. You can have really good teams that are just flummoxed for one reason or another. And, you know, I think the Giants have always been susceptible to that, as many good teams are. They're not the overpowering, you know, they could lose three straight in the climax series. So did I think they were capable of losing this series? Absolutely. Did I think they were going to? No, not likely. They basically, the whole series was decided by the number of bad starts made by Fighters pitchers compared to the number of bad starts made by the Giants pitchers. And when the Fighters pitchers made bad starts, the Giants were able to put more good swings on their pitches than the Fighters guys were. The Fighters, really, you know, like you said about the Holton game, the Giants had, it was the worst start the Giants had, and it was, the Fighters didn't really maul him. I mean, they could have really beat the tar out of him, and they didn't. So they don't quite have it, and the Giants were without their best player for a couple of games. And, no, the Giants are deeper. The Fighters have a lot of things going for them, and I thought they were, you know, they had a heck of a season. The Giants were at half throttle. They played well. They fought hard when they needed to fight hard. So, yeah, great series. Great job by the Giants. Good job by the Fighters. Great series. Otsukaresama.
Yep. So, one note that I saw on the way home tonight that was that, Fighters pitching coach Masato Yoshii is leaving. I don't know if he was fired or if he just decided to quit, but he's leaving. He's out as pitching coach. And the quote that he gave was that his opinion and Kuriyama's opinion were differing. And that was a difference of opinion was the reason that he's leaving. So there's that. Now, let's get to the Sawamura Award, which was announced, I think, on Monday of last week. And it was no surprise, Tadashi Setsu of SoftBank was the main man this season. He took over after an exodus of pitching talent. The top three guys in the rotation left, and he handled the load like an ace. I think he was the best pitcher in the Pacific League. He met 5 of the 7 benchmarks that he needed to, but so did Kenta Maeda of the Hiroshima Carp, who I liked as well for the award if he's going to win it. But I'm fine with the choice. I think in a league with a DH, if you can put up similar numbers in a league without a DH, that you should almost automatically win the award because you're facing hitters more often than you're facing pitchers. So I'm fine with it.
The other thing is going the other way because as far as wins and losses, that's irrelevant because, you know, your opponents are playing in the same conditions as you. As far as Kenta Maeda, well, I think there were two other pitchers who were, I think Utsumi was another pitcher who might possibly have been considered. He didn't have the two guys had 4 benchmarks and some pretty good numbers, Utsumi. And, I mean, who was the other guy? I don't recall right now, but anyway. It was not the easiest of picks because these guys had kind of blank spots on their report card. You know, like they had a couple of did not finishes on their courses.
Mm-hmm. Incompletes.
Yeah, that's what they call them. Incomplete. Everybody had an incomplete on their sheet, so it was hard to call anybody a valedictorian. But the only one, you know, not enough innings or not enough strikeouts or not enough wins. The strikeouts, the wins, and the innings were really hard to come by this year. Everybody got the games. Everybody got the ERA. So nobody got the complete game. So, yeah, Setsu, I figured it was a toss-up, Setsu or Maeda. I didn't know which was going to get it. I didn't think it was going to be Utsumi because he had an extra, you know, he had an extra incomplete on his report card. So.
All right, well, congratulations to him. Now let's go to fielding questions. All right, so we had comments only this past week, and everyone was talking about, in fact, I wrote a story for the paper talking about the talk on Facebook is about, Facebook and Twitter is about how the Giants could sweep on both sides of the Pacific. So Claudio wrote in, he said, my gratitude to Nipponhan for avoiding a Giants sweep on both sides of the Pacific. Now let's see if they can avoid a Giants win on both sides of the Pacific, but unfortunately, Claudio, as you know, they were only able to win 2 games. And then from Ted, lives in the Bay Area, and he says, hi, I'm a new listener to the podcast, which I really enjoy, so thank you for that. My prediction for the series is Giants in 4, and this, of course, was right after we asked for your predictions. Giants in 4, this series is eerily similar to the World Series. The Fighters have had such a long layoff offensively that they just have no rhythm and are really struggling to put runs on the board, much like Detroit. Hope you continue doing the podcast. Thanks a lot, Ted. We appreciate it. And, yeah, they had their struggle. I think it was in part due to the layoff, but I think the Giants' pitching was stellar.
And
that's probably, I mean, in the PLCS, they were facing the SoftBank pitchers, but not the top of the rotation. We got Yang, who pitched really well.
Can't fault him for that.
And then some. They didn't have to face. When did they face Setsu in the last game? But he got hurt and went out of the game, and they didn't have to face the ace. So they were facing, let's say, a different level of pitching, I think, in that series, and that's why they look so good, maybe in some particular spots. But they didn't score a lot of runs in that series either.
No, they didn't. And as far as the Giants out pitching, I mean, they had Utsumi twice and Holton once and pitched so-so and Miyaguni. And who else pitched in this series? I'm going to forget.
Sawamura.
It was good, so... Yeah, were they outpitched? Yeah, I think that's I think the Fighters, you know, to put it really bluntly, they were outpitched a little, they were out hit a little. The fielding, I'm not gonna say it was dead even. I think the Fighters' fielding was good, but it was close to dead even.
With Murata making the plays that he made, he really changed the aspect of when you hit balls to the left side.
Another thing that was really, I'll tell you, of course, Matsumoto had that game, the one off, game 4, which this is a game that shouldn't have gone, this game would never have gone 9 innings if it hadn't been for Matsumoto.
Well, they were playing so far in, he had no choice but to catch that ball. That wasn't as great a play, I didn't think, as people were making it out to be.
game did he throw the guy out at the plate? Was that game two? No, I was at the
He threw Inaba out at the plate when the 7-3 win. It would have been game three, but that play didn't really matter.
Okay, but I'm just saying he was just a real offense, defense. He did everything. I mean, he did everything letter perfect. And so the Fighters had a couple of guys had big series. The Giants had, you know, Matsumoto was brilliant. Chono was brilliant. John Bowker. I mean, what do you say about a guy who doesn't play all of a sudden and bam, two runs, five home runs, five RBIs?
He was my number two pick for MVP of the series, yeah. Seven RBIs in the series.
Five RBIs in game one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all right, guys, thank you very much for your comments. And anyone else, please, or everyone else, please send your questions or comments and use an MP3 file, and we'll play it on the show. Send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and everybody will be able to listen. It'll be awesome.
It will be awesome, and I want to thank you all for being such good listeners this season.
And we will continue to do, we're going to do a show next week and the week after that. And the week that I run the Kobe Marathon, November 25th, we will have no show. And then we'll go two shows per month until the new season starts next year.
Right. We'll have we've got coming up on the schedule. The next thing coming up on the schedule is the Asian Series, which I'm not going to in Busan. The Giants will be there in Korea playing teams from China and Korea and Australia and Taiwan. And then after that, on the 16th and 18th, we have Cuba playing in Japan, which should be fun. And we have the MVPs are going to be a few days after that. And so about that time, towards the end of November, we'll get to talk about all the MVPs and how John sees his voting in the MVP voting, which I want to hear.
Yeah, well, first of all, we got to get this through this marathon, so don't worry about it. The vote's already done. That's not going to change. We still got some training to do to get through this run.
Marathon. You'll make a mockery of the course.
All right, everyone. Enjoy your off season, and we will continue to bring the show to you until the new season starts next year. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. Bye-bye.